Okay, I'm going to give you my sort of a sidebar, but it's just what Eric's talking about. I'm going to give you my interpretation of Ephesians 5, 22, 21 through 33. You know what I'm talking about. You know, wives, submit to your husbands. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. It also says wives, respect your husbands. I think that makes it easier to think about that one. Just you just get all stuck in on the submission word in a way that I'm convinced Paul didn't intend this. First thing, if you're going to figure it out, you need to connect it back to Genesis 1, 2, and 3. And what the Bible's telling us in terms of what this relationship is. We need relationship. We're made for relationship. We're relational beings. It's how we become more of the person that God made us to be. And we need to keep that in the center of it. And as we look at Ephesians 5, we need to be thinking about that. You move into the fall, Genesis 3, and thinking still about relationship. When Adam says, the woman you gave me, forever people said, blame shifting. It is exactly, but what's happening in the relationship? It's an indication through the story, the way it's told, is that Adam's relationship with God is different now. It's not about connecting, it's about protecting. I'm putting the blame on you as best I can, which is ludicrous. I mean, it's really stupid, but that's what we do. We do stupid things in protecting ourselves. And same thing with Eve. It's now about protecting, not connecting. And even himself. He thinks he's protecting himself because he's staying away from thinking about what's really going on. And it's just all of us. God, in the I don't like to call them curses. I think they're more consequences. Curses, we can kind of think he's creating something new as opposed to it's like, I set it up this way. You violated what I told you not to do. Here's what the consequences are. Adam, before now, there was this balance in your relationship and the work you had to do. Be fruitful, multiply, take dominion. You could do that, and neither one detracted from the other. Now, Adam, it's all out of balance. And you're going to focus more on your work. By the sweat of your brow. Was he saying it's going to be harder? Probably. Part of the brokenness that impacts creation itself. But he's going to get more focused there, not so much in the relationships. Eve, your desire will be for your husband. I don't understand all that's entailed there. But a piece of it is, you're going to get out of balance and focusing more on relationships than the others. And now you two will have a relationship. I think that what Paul's doing in Ephesians 5 is commentary on that imbalance, on the shattering of the relationships and the imbalancing and the disjointedness of the relationships. And he's saying, this is how you work against that. Husbands, love your wives. Yeah, you're going to be doing your work, but love your wives. Wives, respect your husbands. And I've been wrestling with that, and in this context of starting with that student and just all the stuff that's been going on, and particularly the dissociation in myself has been so helpful because the dissociation is so much about closing. So nobody can feel. So back there with Paul Koistra, the effort, it was a big part of it 20 years ago or more. If you're more willing to admit you made a mistake, you're taking a half step toward it. Because it's not a protective act, the admission of making a mistake. So anything that's not protective, self-protective. And then in that context, I think I shared last night, wrestling with my daughter's divorce. And why am I still so upset a year later with Jason? And one of those, oh, it's
It's because he broke his promise to me. I didn't know he made a promise to me, but he did. To take care of him. He didn't do that. And every day I'm wrestling with the fact that no one's really taking care of Beth. And she needs that. Just to do that. And that's our choice. And then thinking through, huh, I made that promise to Harvey Gruen. And there's a mutuality to this, but before we get to that, it helped me see, oh, that's what Ephesians 5 is about. Getting married is about taking care of each other. But Ephesians 5 is helping us see husbands, that's your like number one thing on your to-do list in your marriage relationship. Take care of her. And yes, it will be really hard if she doesn't trust you with it. So wives, your number one thing, that respect, open it. It might feel not fair. But eventually it gets, it's mutual. You're taking care of each other's heart, you both have to open up your heart. But I actually believe that's what Ephesians 5 is about. Now, you can go think about that, because I'm not explaining it all fully how it got there. I don't even know if I can. And I know I'm taking some leaps there. But it takes us right back to this stuff that I feel like matches what the Bible, what God tells us, what people are really like, and how important relationships are, and how it just makes sense. Oh, if we did it, isn't that what the gospel is? Where does your, if we think of it in these terms, temporally speaking, where does your relationship with Christ begin? Not all of us, but many of us have some sort of crisis experience. But the nature of the crisis is this. You get to this place where you recognize you need a Savior. You can't do it yourself. And what has to happen? Confess the need. There ain't no grace if you don't confess the need. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying it does not apply. Do you know you need grace? Because you, part of the need is, I can't do it myself. In every work, it seems to be that God works in our life, has to be in that kind of place. So, I can't do it myself. I need God. Relationships the same. What does she end up saying? Conversation for her is two things. What am I afraid of? And what do I need from you? I think it's shaped like the gospel shape. You might do some thinking about, when was the last time you had a conversation about, what do I need from you? What do you need from me? It kind of scares me. I can't really think of the last time. But did that, per se. And that's a problem. And that's the hurdle. One of the things, I'm sort of shifting back, one of the things that's happened since I interviewed 4 years ago, I'll give it two steps. The first thing was in opening myself up to the possibility of being more connected and more aware, even though this is something I worked on for 4 years, part of the business. So there have been little things all along, but there was this big turn around the corner. You know, like I was traveling down the same street, now I'm in a different street. Was I recognized there was a whole new level of perception of other people. So I'm the 16 or 17-year-old that's like, how can you know what a person's like? Emotional intelligence of about 3, you know, 0. Just don't get it much. Using rationality to make it through life and then, you know, go shoot hoops. Survive. And just try and keep my eyes open and pay attention and practice. So when I'm sitting at a red light now, and you know, 2 miles from my house, there's this red light. We're still kind of out in the country. It's growing fast the last 15 years. And those people are making a left-hand turn. They have the green arrow. I look at their faces, and I try to make, you know, in that second, some, how are they doing? I've never done that before. I mean, like, ever. You know, looked at someone with an interest and a curiosity and a focus of what's happening back there. I've been really playing from as safe a distance as I possibly can. As I talk with people about their affairs and all this stuff, I've been doing it on my head. So that's one piece. Just perceiving. Another piece is I'm a different person. I have conversations with people. I mean, I had conversations before, but from a distance. Now, if they didn't see that distance, then distance. So at this point, there's a mobile on the run. I don't know if you have those here. A convenience store, gas station, 4 miles from my house. So I stop there most mornings. I don't drink coffee. I never moved to Seattle. And I drink Coke. I get my caffeine. And so I go into this store most mornings. I have conversations with those people. They know me. I know some of their names. You know, and they know stuff about me. It's like, I never did this before. And I've come to believe that some of my best image-bearing moments where I'm relating happen at home. Now, I don't know what Judgment Day looks like. You know, I don't know what it looks like when we stand before the King and say, it's well done. But whatever it looks like, I just bet you that God's going to look and say, well done. Those are really good moments at home. Because it's being who you need to be. A person who pays attention to other persons as if they can. I wasn't doing that. I probably was. But for the sake of disposition, and I certainly wasn't opening myself up to whatever it might cost. Not too long ago, couldn't be. Anyway, not too long ago, drove into the mobile. I was running late. No, I wasn't too late. I'm not there. You ever have one of those moments where you're kind of like, God, really? You know? And so I drive up. There are two spots. I intentionally picked this one away, not thinking about it too much, to keep distance from this car with the hood up. It was a van, the hood up. The jumper cable's already attached and it wound around. It's laying on the ground. And this lady just standing there. I mean, really? And of course, so I. Oh. So I got up and I said, it's one of the dumbest questions in the world. Do you need help? No, you need to jump. And she said, I mean, obviously, she didn't say that. She was like, well, the lady in there said she's going to call somebody, but you know, they haven't shown up. And let me move the car over. I popped the hood. She lifts the hood, hooks it. She knew what she was doing. I mean, she really knew what she was doing. And it wouldn't turn over. I mean, it was really dead. Maybe it was something else. She tried it a few times. And I said, leave it running a while, go in, come back. Went in, got my Coke, came out, and she was all disconnected. My hood was down, and she was ready to go. And we talked for 30 seconds. She was off to clean, more like sanitize. I think it was like a medical facility or something. She had to get her job, all that. And that's why she was there.
expectation that she won't have to do that. You know, the conversation I had with myself was really sort of the sadness of thinking about a big part of me preferred to avoid and projecting back not too long. This is really sad. But also it also it's huge. It's like I'm a real person. You know? I mean, how hard is it? It's all set up. You know, it would have been faster if I just would have parked in that spot in the first place, you know? And it's such a cool thing. You know, be fruitful, multiply, take dominion. You could summarize that as take care of creation. Take care. And take care of each other. It's all for us. What value will that have in that woman's life? Got her to work fight, and sooner than would the boss probably would have shown up or something like that. I don't know. Some evangelistic impact? I don't know. Or maybe just well, that was nice. Or that was different. Something about that. And they don't know. Yeah, the something is the guy. I don't know, pretty skillfully for a lot of years. I'm going to take about 5 more minutes and wait. Stop. You flip the page with number 5, asking about your partner's deeper emotions. Number 6, sharing your own deeper, softer emotions. Number 7, staying together. Don't look at those, read those, but you can do that. And I think you have a really good sense of what we're talking about. But now, if you will flip the page to, you know, what we were supposed to do this morning, we haven't gotten there yet. I've written on my thing, Conversation 4, page 141, 143. We'll look at that second one, which is what that's located. But a part of it is having conversations about what are we afraid of and what we need. But I want to spend just two things. Right here, it says HMT, hold me tight, or the pages that come after. Sharing the softer emotions. You know, that's 7 pages. Take a look at that. It's really what we're going for. And even that can be different perspective. Yeah, so it's talk number 2, this piece. And that, sorry, it's hard to find. What's that? Right now is this first HMT, sharing the softer emotions. And it's right behind, but we're not going to look at it. I'm just going to point at it so you can look at it. But I'll make this one comment, and then there's another piece I want to do for 4 minutes. If things are sort of spinning, and it would make sense if they were, and you wanted a way to kind of simplify this, get something to focus on, sharing the softer emotions with yourself. First of all, assume this. When you're disagreeing, you're sharing the harder emotions. Okay, the harsher emotions. That can even be a good shift in a perspective. To think, rather than I'm angry and I'm acting in such a way as I'm going to try to win this, I'm going to defend myself against that, I'm going to show her how wrong she is, I'm going to show him whatever, rather than recognize, okay, so we got these harsh emotions that we're living out right now. By the way,
You do that with each other more than other people. You know? Because you that's a measure of your trust. You know you can get away with it at a certain point. The problem is it still does create the disconnection. It doesn't create culture. So here's a fact. Very few people talk about it. It's I didn't make it up. A guy named Ed Tiber did. And it's one of those, when you teach it to students, they forget this one faster than anything I've ever seen. Emotions come in constellations. Just like the stars are in groups, emotions come in groups. It's the way it is. So when, you know, your spouse says, I'm so angry at you, or they model that out, you might want to ask them, well, what else are you? Because the softer emotions are connected to harsher emotions. And too often we get stuck in the harsher emotions and we don't get down to the soft. Often, Tiber says he gives three examples, but he's very clear that there are all kinds of shapes and constellations, just like the stuff in the sky. Sadness, anger, guilt. I can remember that because it's sad. Sadness, anger, guilt. The one stated first, I'm saying on top, is the one we're most comfortable with. There are people who are most comfortable with sadness. And they're going there because they're really uncomfortable. Somebody who's depressed, in the old days, we used to call depression as anger turned inward. Which is a really pretty good description of a lot of times. And so some of you in the room might be someone who leans towards sadness first. But there's anger too. And you might not believe that. Because the anger scares the bejesus out of you, whatever they are. I don't know about the guilt piece, it could be other things. The other one is where this anger and sadness are flipped, where people most comfortable with anger. I think there are more of those, but really uncomfortable with sadness. And then he has the shame he connects to that. And I think that's pretty common experience. I can remember that one too because of the anger, sadness, shame. Through Richard Winter, I developed a little bit of a relationship with Dana Elmer. It's famous. I know he told the story. Conference, someone's cell phone rang, he answered it. Can you imagine how, it was like 300 people in the room. Fixed up. Hello? No, this is Dan. Oh, she's right here. Would you like to speak with her? He doesn't care about people's feelings sometimes. That's So thinking about, let's go after the softer feelings. Now, you don't have to wait till the harsher feelings erupt to do that, but it's a helpful thing in that. But you can go have conversation about it. So let's think about these disagreements that we've had, that we haven't really worked through. We haven't repaired enough to where we're really past it, where forgiveness is happening. This afternoon we'll talk about forgiveness. But to go after those softer emotions. Then, I think I've taken my 5 minutes, but I'll if I'm doing this. On this page, talk two, we started last night talking about Scott and Missy. Missy the horse, by the way, it's not a female. Yeah, not a female horse, but. not to leave our other horse out, Cabo. I thought this morning, some of these people, like these seminary professors must get paid pretty well. Two horses, it sounds like. Cabo was a free to a good home deal. It's the only way we could have done it. And Missy was, I can't believe I'm going to say this. Missy was an adoption. We tried to talk the adoption place down like they wanted $1,500. We started at $300. And we finally pulled it off because we borrowed, how much did we borrow? $1,000 from our daughter? No, she gave us $500. We didn't even borrow it. Anyway, I was just concerned. The one I misunderstood.
So as I talked about Scott, who's this Pat Pirelli natural horsemanship approach type person. The piece I'm going to talk about right now, it's just the very beginning. It's going to take 2 minutes. We bought a very, very old house, farmhouse, built in 1853, and the barn was about the same time. So it was a very old barn. And Scott walks into our barn. There's a rail there where Missy's come up. We've tied him up. The cobbler's over here. And he has coffee. I had a group of students out the week previously, and one of the students brought coffee. It was the first time she smelled it. She was really curious, and it got into it a little bit. And I'm not sure about that, but when Scott came, boy, she smelled that, and she's going after his coffee. He's talking about that. And conversation with us, explain how he got in it, into it, and all of that. And it took a while. I think it was when something occurred. And so he's having conversations with her the whole time. And he's kind of, you know, once in a while looking at her, but most of the time not looking at her, intentionally. It's a confrontational thing that's pressure to look straight into his eyes. We're prey. We're predators. So that's a, I'm out to get you to look him straight in the eye. It's the same thing to walk straight at them. Now, we have been told, so go in an arc. He mentioned later, right, we haven't figured out, that I'm walking in a straight line at a diagonal. Predators go in circles. Of course they do. You ever see like a pack of wolves or whatever? And but he's standing there, and he's hardly done anything with it. He's having all this conversation, but he starts talking to us about her. He's learned about her because he's so focused. He's having a conversation, but he is so focused on the animal. And reading the nonverbals. The thing with the horses that we kind of take as, oh, that's the horse world, but it's like, oh no, people. You know, we've made this huge mistake of thinking communication rides so much on the words. Even though so many of us have been in those psychology classes or somewhere where they tell us that 97% of communication or 93, whatever it is not in the words. Remember? And he just starts talking about the things that he's learned just by being there and focusing. Some of it is even emotional. Do you know you communicate emotion? Some of it, I don't know what it is. You ever walk into a room like, say, this? People are standing up talking. Like, believe me, we really will be just, you know. And you have this feeling someone's looking at you, and you turn and look, and there they are. How'd you know that? I don't know. Don't try to answer the question. Just recognize that happens. And it's not a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences, actually. It's something else. And Scott was using all of that to start to explain our force to us. When all he's done is stand and have conversations. But it's paying attention. There's so much more to understand and know about each other. It's almost like, I know we're finite, but it's almost like we're infinitely mysterious. And part of the glory of marriage is you get a chance to move into that mystery on a regular basis. But it takes dancing to dance. I think it's done. Sarah? Yeah.
So 4 years ago, you had a breakthrough, and it's changed in many ways. What have you seen in the marriage between the breakthrough?
Great question. Simultaneously, so in our history, you know, that 4 years ago happened before our daughter was divorced.
the divorce was incredibly difficult for Carolyn. It was hard for all of us. But very, very difficult. And Christmas party for our program, Virgin Wire, was at his house. As we're leaving, he said something about, you know, how, or some comment. And Carolyn just shared a little bit about how hard the 2013 thing. We think hardest of the hardest. And I'm standing there listening, I'm like, so on the way home, it's about a 45-minute drive from his house to our house. I said to her, I haven't understood how hard it's been. And you really want to talk to me about it. And she said, and I'm waiting for her to start talking about it. I think in the past, I would have tried to push it. I would have tried to, in the normal way we train any, say, animal, make her submit. I'm a counselor, for goodness sake, and I'm married to you. Don't you think you could talk to me at least? It seems it's counterintuitive. It's not what I think it should be, actually. She needs to deal with this as a person she knows. I just created the opportunity. I guess it's not what she needs. But that was a big part of the context. So when she comes and says, I want to get a divorce. And I had just been through that. Oh, husbands make a promise to their father-in-laws. And Caroline's father was never able to provide that horse for her. And all that. So that was an easy thing. There wasn't any discussion. We made the decision. And in my mind, it was the horses. After I made that decision, one of the phone calls I made was to my brother. We don't talk all that often. And it turns out, I'd forgotten this, that his wife's brother, he had a whole bunch of one of those, his, hers, ours. Her mom was killed in a car accident. Lots and lots. I think they were over 13 years. And one of her brothers, Branson, Missouri, he'd been a missionary in South American country, got kicked out by the new dictator, moved, did a counseling degree, bought a ranch, and made it a therapeutic ranch with horses for teenagers. So my brother had been there, and he starts talking about how wonderful horses are. I didn't really get that horses themselves, by their nature, just kind of do that. So that's one piece is sort of like stuck thinking of it. So I'm just going to be there for her. I was thinking about this the other day, and it doesn't quite make sense. But you know, well, occasionally, you know, I have some words. Now, my self-centeredness, I think I'm better at this than she is. But as I just said that, I'm like, I'm not thinking. Because it really is we
sometimes she initiates that. Sometimes it's happened. I learned this stuff, and so now I'm can so easily make it. It's how we are, post Adam. It's about us. It's a me first world. But maybe that's the biggest difference. It's less me first. Much more sensitive. Other questions?
Yeah, I just have a thought. I think something that keeps that just really keeps ringing in my mind in this is the alternative. You know, rather than whatever your reaction is to try and protect yourself, is ultimately coming to a place where you continue to throw yourself into the fray. And the only way that you can do that is basically with the security of God, our strong tower, is to know that I can enter this moment totally vulnerable, fully expecting that I am going to be hurt,
right.
and have that be okay,
right.
and have Christ be my set, my comfort. You know, the thing about trust is that people suck. You know.
Right. Well, there's nobody that's really trustworthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Your wife, your husband, no matter how much they love you, they are going to hurt you.
And sooner or later, yeah, push comes to shove, everybody will protect themselves. Everybody will make the decision
for themselves. Or it's
there are exceptions.
It's their desire to do that, right? Our reaction is self-preservation, right? It's to do that. But in Christ, that is what we are. We are fighting against that in order to love that person at our own expense. And I just keep coming back to this. You know, the idea of God and strong tower, in my own mind, that is so hard because in my mind, I want to make myself the strong tower for God. You know, I want to say, I am the strong tower. You know, I can repel and look at me and God has made me strong. That is false.
So you're preaching the gospel.
Well, what
you're
I mean
actually
is
preaching the gospel
is to say instead, you know, that I recognize that I do it, that my perception is wrong, and that I am far too prone. And I get what it is.
Right.
I think that you're
right.
Some of what you're saying, and I'm excited by it. I think the perspective that I'm getting about God being the strong tower and my shield and my bulwark. Because the reason I think that's impressive and important to me is because I think for most of my life I've in my own mind have tried to make myself that for him or somehow make myself that in him. But that's really not my calling. My calling is to be vulnerable, to be soft and loving to not just my wife, but to the world around me, knowing all the while that there's pain in that. The same pain, in fact, that Christ went through when he loved people even to his own death. But that is a scary
That's what
thing.
I mean you're preaching about.
That's a scary thing. You know, to know that you're entering that going to be afraid, but to be okay with it, knowing that Christ loves you and the comfort you take peace. You know, I see it there. I definitely am doing that. But I definitely see it, I think, and that's exciting.
So last night we read Ephesians 5:1-2. Here's verse 2. Walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering. So, husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. Gave himself up. Fragrant offering and sacrifice. We overestimate pain. And we just way overestimate pain. When we get hurt, if it's a really, really big one, often the first question is, you know, God, how did you let this happen? But in the biblical story, there's nothing about God, I think I'm accurate with that, nothing that's pretty extreme, about God saying, I'm going to prevent you. It's what he said. Joshua 1 is one of my favorite pieces, examples of this. So Joshua getting ready to take the land. You know, God doesn't mince. You think he wants to handle Joshua's pain softly? He starts out, Moses, my servant, is dead. Period. You know, don't work on it. You know, it's like, okay. So he says, be strong and courageous. You're going to lead these people into the land. He doesn't even give them a battle plan. He just says, be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid.
was the only thing he gives of any sort of reassurance at all. I'm with you. You're in a relationship with me. I am with you. I'm not, he's not even saying, you know, I'm going to make sure you don't get hurt. He doesn't say that. Certainly he can't say, none of your people will die. You all won't even break a sweat. You're just going to walk in and everybody's going to lay down dead. No. This is going to cost you. But I'm with you. What else do you need? Marriage is similar to that sort of gospel sense of, oh, this is going to cost you. But you're going to end up with now it's Adam and Eve. He sees Eve the first time and it's like, whoa, bone on my bone. And the more we get with, the more we have the sense of, this person is like mine. Not to possess, but to be connected to. Changes everything. I was going to look on my phone, which is my Bible, my travel. But I won't do that. Check out the Paul's prayers in Ephesians 1 and Ephesians 3. As he was saying, praying for the people in Ephesus for exactly what you're talking about. One of the things he talks about is that you'll be grounded in love. And that every one of us would get a hold of it. It's like, I can't really do that. Unless you're grounded in something. And grounded in the sense of, I actually think, first of all, grounded in who God has made you to be, your beloved child. So you can enter into a relationship with your wife, with your husband, knowing this is going to leave a mark. You know? But it's okay. Because your personhood isn't riding on it. You know, but so often, especially in the beginning of marriage, our personhood's riding on it. Our goodness is riding on it. It's like, if I try to do something for her, and it's like, oh, thank you. You know, it's like, I'm now nobody. You know, in terms of in my own soul. And I'm not likely to take it out of her. We all start there. Because I wasn't grounded enough in who God has made me to be, and grounded in the love that he has for me. And grounded enough in the sense that it's all about the relationship, it's not about the results. The gospel is about the relationship that establishes and nurtures. It has results and it grows us as people, but it's not about the behavioral results. They happen, but they're just a product, not the point. And marriage relationships, the same thing. It's about the relating. And yes, growth happens and all of that, but it's not really the point, it's the product. The point is the process that we try to stay in and nurture, where it's, let's stay vulnerable enough that we're connected. We know we are. One last thought. Sort of said this last there. I've worked with quite a bit of infidelity affairs. I'll just, so far, everyone, it comes down to, they don't have that process. I can get sort of a sinking feeling when I have a young couple and they're talking, they both have jobs and they're talking to me about what they're going to do with her money and his money. Because there's no me. The point's not the money, the point's the process. Not doing some hard things to actually let go of, I'm keeping myself by keeping all my stuff and protecting it. And we're working that out together, as opposed to, this is we, and everything's a process. That's a confusing illustration. But when I'm with that young couple, it's like, oh, they don't know that it can be an affair. Waiting because they're not connected. They're not connected. When you have that we process, that process where you can be vulnerable with someone else, affair is almost impossible. Because affairs are never about sex. They're about the illusion of this is someone I could connect with. You're not even looking for it if you're connecting at home enough. Just as like focusing on the relationship fixes that. It really prevents everything. It's just the whole thing. Father, we, you know, that I'm not sure how to say, pray for at this moment. I'm aware that each one of us in the room is just in a different place. And probably each spouse with their spouse is just in a different place from each other. And whatever that is, we know you'll use it. We ask you to use it. And we ask you to open our hearts up even more to what you're doing, what you have for each one of us. And in the time that folks have to walk, to talk, whatever they choose to do, just keep that up. Take advantage of these moments away from the normality and busyness and speed.